Good. Well, welcome. We turn to your delegate workbook. Who's brought their preparatory workbook with them? And business cards.
Yeah.
Now, I just want you to get to know each other. There's too much isolationism going on up and down north and south. And I do want you to keep in contact when today is over. I find the networking, sometimes I watch you outside as I go and get my quiet time, and I think, I actually just want to leave them there, you know. It's much more fun just watching them. Probably get more out there than they do in here. We turn to the delegate workbook, page 2. Let's keep to tradition and have one of the guests read this out. Sean, anything in grey in a grey box is a guest readout. The protocol is you have to stand up so your voice carries, and so that we can embarrass you, because we like embarrassing guests. And you get to read out all the grey boxes. Away you go, nice and loud.
Do not seek to follow in the footsteps of men of old. Seek what they may sort.
I'm going to stop you there, Sean. What's that got to do with the preparatory workbook poem that you all received?
Everything.
Remember receiving the poem in the prep workbook? What was that called?
Carry out paths for calves.
The calf path, or the path of the calf. What's that comment got to do with the path of the calf?
Don't follow that path.
Yeah, don't follow them. Follow what they were trying to seek and then find your way there. My job is to help you find your way there. What I'm going to share with you today are thoughts as to how I see it being done. You need to digest this information today and decide which of those is most appropriate for you. But you need to find your way, and part of the responsibility of coaching, which is in between the workshops, is to help you find your way. So be very careful about today, what you collect, what you take away, and then how you use it. My responsibility is to help you use it appropriately for your business. Carry on, Sean.
Ultimately, advisors who refuse to grow are shortchanging their clients who depend on them. No less than an automobile company which refuses to use the latest safety technology undermines its customers. Such growth must go beyond short-term economies and embrace your learning, reputation, expertise and experience. It is this long-term and strategic approach that ensures that the light at the end of the tunnel is new territory, not an onward trail.
Thank you, Sean. And we'll be talking about your growth today. We talk about growth of fees, but you'll see that this is much more than growth of fees. This is much more than money. And if you think it's just to do with money, then you'll miss the point, and your fees will not grow as you would like them to grow. Good. Page 3 is when you come back to this later on and think, where was that comment, where was that principle, where was that practice example? That's your table of contents. Page 4. You need to take your highlighters on page 4 and just follow the question or the request at the top. You have 60 seconds. You don't intellectualise about page 4. This is gut feeling response. If you intellectualise about it, you'll miss the whole point. Go. And then turn the page and follow the next request on page 5. Just for the sake of guests, this is all being recorded, so anything you say will be taken down and given in evidence against you. Again, 60 seconds, you have 50 left. And stop. Those of you who are fairly visual and understand patterns will get this later on today. We will come back to these two pages later on today. But this is about what you should hope to get out of today and what I need to communicate to you and you need to understand. Things that you need to start happening in your business and things that I suggest you might want to stop happening in your business. We will pull these pages out and refer back to them, and then it will just suddenly click. All right. Everything I've put in the workbook today is not an accident. I don't mean I need to teach you or educate you about these things, but it is there in the way it's there for a purpose. And you need to keep asking on each page, what's he done this for? What's it graphic? What's the graphic shape like this for? What am I supposed to be learning from this page? Turn to the next page, page 6. I'm not going to discuss page 6. We're simply going to, as four teams, keep referring to it throughout the day. So if you can make sure that your team gets some of that. And Richard, if you can make sure your team gets some of that. If you keep this page by the side of your workbook, thank you. Make sure it's really by the side. Don't get it mixed up in the workbook. Spare ones. You'll need to refer to this during the course of the day. So don't get it mixed up with your workbook. Thank you. Spares? Is that Steve? Tell him no. It's a poltergeist. Good. What those of you who are Advisor Gym members and understand the concepts and the way we do workshops here, what do you think these arrows and this way of expressing these principles are saying to us? What have we learnt from previous workshops? When I've got arrows like that, it actually means something. And it's
one flows naturally from one to the next.
Yeah. More than that, look at the names in each box, the blue names. The words suggest something.
It's a compound effect, so you must go from one to the other without skipping any steps.
Yeah. It isn't just, I do this, then I do this, then I do this, then I do that in linear fashion. What it's suggesting, Stephen, is if you get these things in the right order and you do them, they have a compounding, not a linear arithmetic effect. It's almost like saying, if you do the first one correctly, you add 10%. If you do the second one correctly, you add 10% of the first. Yeah, it's more than just an extra 10% overall. It's 10% plus 10% plus 10% plus. It's that kind of compounding effect. It's like going to the races. I don't go to the races, but you know what I'm talking about, the accumulator. It's that kind of effect. And whenever in future you see this graphic in a workshop, it means this is a compounding effect in my view. So we're going to talk about all of those today. We're going to spend most of our time on two of them, and we're only going to touch on the other five, because the two are what today is all about. For example, number 5, the position, is about marketing, and we're going to spend 3 workshops alone on marketing, but we are going to highlight principles today. Right, page 7. You need your highlighter again, and you've done this exercise, but I want to see what you thought. Here's the question. If you were teaching this today, if you were communicating this workshop, which of those business factors would you be focusing your attention on today? Think about what the purpose of the workshop is. The fees protocol, the surprising fees protocol. It's about high fees. Which of these would you be spending your time educating the team about today? And as a business leader, which would you need to be focusing your attention on to acquire higher fees for the work that you do? This template is probably the most valuable template I've ever designed for my business. It's up on my wall, and it helps us focus on what are we supposed to be doing here in any given week or month. Okay, let's see what you got. Andy.
I've concentrated on having systems, effectiveness and efficiency.
Uh-huh.
That's what we're struggling with at the moment.
In order to achieve higher fees. Okay? Who differs from that? Stuart?
Client satisfaction.
Okay, you want to focus on client satisfaction today. Anybody differ on this table? Richard?
I might do, but maybe I've misunderstood the question.
Okay, quite possibly.
Client profitability.
Yeah, I don't think...
Business person, you're in business to make money, I think.
Yes. I don't think you misunderstood it at all. In my view, I'll tell you later on what I think. So, Richard thinks client profitability is what we should be focusing on today.
You said there's a single, out of an up page, a single thing.
Okay. So you would focus on client profitability, you could focus on client satisfaction, you focus on systems, and that's interesting. Now pick three things, now I'm going to open it up a bit, that you think we should be concentrating on today. So you picked your top one, now highlight the three that together will bring the subject high fees protocol into play. Okay, turn to the next page. We're now on page 8. This table is responsible for page 8. What have you got there? You've got a page missing? No? This page is responsible for points number 1 and 2, principles number 1 and 2. This, you're responsible for principles number 3 and 4. I'll explain what you need to do in a second. 5 and 6, 7 and 8, and I get 9 and 10. Okay, you have just 60 seconds to get your head around. What's this all about? What's he trying to say here? And if you were teaching this group, what would you be saying about these particular principles? What would you be saying to us? And stop. Okay? Questions number one, principles number one and two. 10 principles. There's always 10 or 12 or 7. There's always a magic number, isn't there? I mean, there might have been 9 or 11, but I made up 10, you know. So, numbers 1 and 2. What are we trying to say here? If you were teaching this, what would you express as the first two principles of acquiring higher fees for the value of your service? Go.
What we're looking at is a service that clients really, really do want, something that we can put into their own words,
even better than
the company themselves. Hi, Stephen.
Yeah, so it's a service or a lifestyle that people aspire to and just really want. And what we're doing is expressing that a way they would express it themselves if they could. And what we're saying is, yes, we can help you get to that stage, that lifestyle, that state of being, and this is how you get there, here's a plan, and by the way, this is the fee.
Okay. Now what's that got to do with point two?
Those are the two points together. What we're saying is, you know, point number two, by the way, the fee, this is just how you... pay to come on the journey.
Okay. Alright, so what I hear you saying there is, first of all, find out what they really want. And what's interesting about this point is the comment I hear across the country from all levels of advisors, I don't care what your service is or what your platform is or anything else, is they won't pay these fees. And it just isn't true. People will pay a lot of money, no matter how limited their budget, for what they really want. And your challenge is, do they really want what you've got? Do they actually give a hoot? And if you can't attract the quality of fees that you think your professional value is worth, then it's because you aren't yet able to communicate that value in such a way that it meets, at a point, what they really, really want in their life. The problem is not in their heads or in their wallets. It's essentially in your inability to do that one thing. When you can find out what people really, really want and deliver it, they will pay a lot of money. Even if they haven't got the money, they'll pay it. Then you all know the story of me going to my brother's wedding and I was £250,000 down in debt. and I couldn't afford the train fare to London to get a new job, but I still got to Florida, and we still had a stonking good 3-week holiday. I wanted that holiday, and we found ways of acquiring the money and paying it back again, because that was important to me in my life. People will pay highly for what they eagerly want. Your challenge is, do they eagerly want what you've got? It's your problem, it's not theirs. It's our inability. And when you finally got it, and then you have the confidence to communicate it, they will pay. Team number two, three and four.
Well, we didn't have a lot of time there to discuss it, but I think we were trying to work out whether there was tiered clients that we had, because there are different, we all have different types of clients,
yeah,
doing different areas of advice, and how do we differentiate between those, and what sort of services do we offer them, what relationship do we have with them. Some are wanting to be just a product, but some, I feel that some want to, you know, some people want products, but some of us want to just offer a service. Products follow.
Okay.
Sort of segmentation of your client.
Yeah, I mean, it ends with that. It ends with that, Howard, but it's not actually that complex. It's really, do you know the difference in a client's head between a product, a service, and a relationship? Do you understand how they see it? Not how you see it as an advisor, how they see it.
Point four, basically, if you're offering them the things that they need and want, they're going to pay for it. But you've got to make them know what they're getting. And, you know, you've got to touch the nerve, things that they want, rather than just saying this is what we're going to do for you. You've got to ask the right questions that will make them react.
Okay, what are the two most important words in sentence number four?
Improve your client's life.
Improve the client's life.
Yeah. I mean, I would demonstrably, in other words, it has to be able to be demonstrated that that's what's going on. Not that you think it is, but you've got to be able to prove it, that there's an improvement in your client's life. Okay, number five. You're getting there. You're getting there. As teachers, you're getting pretty good. Five and six. What's going on in five and six? What are the principles we're trying to communicate here? I could do this by myself, but I need you to get your head around it very early in today's workshop. What is the point about five and six?
Five is outcomes. It's trying to put your service or your product in terms that the client might understand what outcomes he wants. So he's interested in power and influence, your service, your life planning service will help him keep control of his business and his destiny, and he put it in terms that he understands.
Yeah. Why have I said first, last, and always?
Because it's all that matters what the client understands.
Okay, first, last, and always actually talks about how frequently you keep communicating outcomes. So, from the very first meeting to every single review process, every letter you write, every mini report you produce, every annual review meeting you have, outcomes have got to be at the top of that communication. So if I'm writing a letter saying we've just put this into place, this is one of the 15 things we had to implement following our meeting and our agreement, I would reiterate at the top of that letter, the purpose of this is the following outcome in your life. I wouldn't just say we put this into place, you know, a SIP. Yes, so? The purpose of this is to help you achieve the outcome that we agreed in our last meeting. Purpose of the annual review meeting is to first of all review the outcomes that you want in your life and to make sure we're on our way to achieving those. How far are we along that progress track? Outcomes, outcomes, outcomes. First, last, and always. And if you write a letter to a client about some work that you're doing and you don't reiterate the outcome, you're missing the point. You're just going through a professional exercise. It's not of help to the client in their mind and their heart.
Dave, I guess that if you consistently do that, then you're inculcating in the client's mind that he thinks outcome, 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 outcome.
And I guess then you're putting in his mind the thought that you understand him fully.
Yeah,
it does. It's not just a professional exercise, it's actually, you know.
Yeah. It just reinforces a lot of things in the client's mind. Okay, and six is what? What's that all about, six?
Enveloping the client in the whole process. It's not about what you think is for the client.
Okay.
It's about what the client thinks is.
All right.
Giving the client more ownership of the plan, developing the plan, going along that journey.
Okay.
So that they feel that they're getting where they want to go.
Right.
Your help.
Okay, and I hear the words, and they're absolutely fine. Our challenge today is how the heck do we do that? And the two words that I would focus on in that sentence and highlight are collaboration and commitment. I watch a number of your processes, and I have to tell you, there's zippo commitment from the client's point of view until halfway through the first year. I'm exaggerating, but you know, you go well into the relationship, and there's zero commitment from the client. You're giving and giving and giving and giving. Not wrong with that. But at some stage, you have to gain commitment in the exercise from the client.
Do you mean by paying a fee, or?
Well, it could be monetarily commitment. But if you have a look at when you start coaching with me, most of you should have received a document called the mutual commitment, yeah? Look, if I'm going to coach you, I expect this stuff from you. If you're not going to deliver, then let's stop this arrangement before we start. If you're not going to behave in this way, and be there when you promise to be there, and all the other stuff, if you're going to just lean on me and depend upon me to think for you, this is not going to work, so let's stop the arrangement before we start. So I demand commitment from you before we start the relationship, and you need to as well. And that takes Stuart confidence, and most of you are kind of getting there. And one day you just crack it. If you want to achieve high fees, you must gain their collaboration commitment. Not just to achieve fees, Stephen, but to push it up to a meaningful level will come with collaboration commitment. 7 and 8. What do I mean by that? 7 and 8, what's all that about?
I'm struggling a bit with 7. I thought it was about maybe about eating too many mince pies at Christmas, but. Yeah.
Okay, what do I really mean?
It was, continually growing and developing your services to the client.
Well, what do I mean by multidimensionally?
Not just selling financial products, but helping out with the probate, somebody dies, newsletters.
Okay.
Choose the company names which we talk about individually.
What is it you think I'm asking you to grow here? You. It isn't just about your fees. It isn't just about the services you're delivering, but you need to do that, Stephen. You need to be aware of what services they really, really want to make sure you grow in delivering that. It's you that's the problem. The problem in all of our businesses is us. We are the problem. If we don't grow in all sorts of ways, then that's like the car manufacturer saying, well, I can't be bothered to put safety belts in because, you know, it's not what we do here. Can't be bothered to invest in that. Because, you know, we sell Model T Fords here, and if you don't like it. I mean, it's just that kind of attitude. You have to change and grow. And so as I read the press in the industry about exams and all that stuff, I just gasp. I understand the age problem, but I'm probably older than most of you. I'm still spending 200, 400 hours a year in education and research, and that doesn't mean going to CPD conferences and workshops. I mean research and education with a lot of money behind it. You have to grow if you want to command high fees, otherwise you're just not worth it, and asking for it isn't going to hack it. You have to grow, you have to change. 9 and 10 I think are pretty obvious. Invest in your business, and it's not about sustained revenue, it's about sustained profit. Okay, thank you. Page 9. Look, this is just about preparation. This is about finding out what they really, really want. Table 1. What do they eagerly want? I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. Just take your highlighter and highlight those that you think, I might be weak here. Just have a look at page 9. There are various circles with words in, highlighting some problems or some opportunities. Highlight those where you think, this might apply to me. Most of us assume far too much about our clients. We assume we know. And I guarantee 100% that if a research group who understands about research and surveys researched and surveyed your clients, you'd be wrong. Absolutely guarantee that. What you think about each of your clients, you'd be off beam. What they want from you, what you keep giving that they really don't want, because you never ask them whether they want it or not, and so on and so forth. You'd be off beam. Who's going off the boil in your relationships, and how do you know? Who's beginning to wane in their interest in you, and how wonderful they think you are, and how on earth do you know that? You're not going to know that from an annual review meeting, because there's 11 three-quarter months in between, and that's a lot of time in a person's life to go off the boil on a relationship. Absence in this situation does not make the heart grow fonder. Turn over to page 10. These are the areas where, if you do your surveys correctly and scientifically, this is where your business will be strengthened. Or this is where you can be more accurate in what you're doing. Your clients may want, circle number 3 from the top, types of services that you don't offer. The thing is, you've never asked them. And they don't even know that you offer it or that you might want to offer it. You just need to constantly ask questions of the whole client base. A good survey will tell you what sort of people you need to employ. Because a good survey will tell you what sort of skills and resources your business needs, because the clients are asking for it and you aren't delivering it. Now, I'm not going to spend time talking about the detail of good surveys. In the appendix, there's about 11 pages of appendix in this workbook, there are some examples of good survey questions. Okay, we're not going to study that today. That's the appendix, you can study that back at the office. What I would say is this: I'm not an expert in surveys. And the reason why, in the bottom right hand corner, there is Advisor Impact's logo, is because they are experts. They are professionally known across the Northern American continent and in the UK as being brilliant in surveys in this industry. They're just professionals at it. And I have to tell you, if I were a financial planner today and I knew they existed, I'm not sure how much they charge for a good survey. Probably at least £1,000. I wouldn't even think about paying it. Wouldn't think twice. To me, that would be a given. How the heck do I know what is really wanted from me if I don't professionally ask in a way that's not skewed through my head? In other words, asking questions that I want them to answer in a certain way. You and I do not know how to do this. We are not professionals in this area. And this is worth a fortune. To me, this question is worth tens of thousands of pounds per annum, tens, to get this right before I then develop my product and my service. I wouldn't think about asking these people to come into my business. I've never spoken to them. They don't know me. I'm not on commission, okay? But to me, this is a no-brainer. To develop
a... yourself?
Sorry?
Did you serve those yourself?
Yes. Yeah.
How often?
About once a quarter.
To whom?
first of all to you.
Have I ever seen
one? Yeah. Starts with the feedback sheets and goes on individual conversations. I'm lucky, I know what to ask in my area. I wouldn't have a clue what to ask in yours. I'm in a different business to you. And I've got two mentors who teach me what to ask. I wish I was brilliant at it, Richard, in your area. I'm not. They're better.
When you say quarterly, you mean the sheet at the end?
It starts with the feedback sheet, which is a bit flimsy, okay, but it's a start. And then I spend a lot of time in meetings, gathering what's really wanted. And I get lots of feedback of what people don't want, and what people wish I stopped doing or do more of. And if you're not telling me, you need to.
How relevant would it be to ask the client in the survey, how much do you, what monetary value do you place upon a service of that?
I think it'd be a great question to ask. I'm not sure that the way that's the way to ask the question.
No, I appreciate that. I'm just saying, you know, if you said, you know, would you be prepared to pay £50 a month or £500 a month or whatever, if you allowed them to put a figure on that?
I think you need to find the figure. A question came from Newbury, I think this answers the question. How do we find out the top fee that people are prepared to pay in a particular industry? So, for example, some of you are into dentists or doctors. How do you do that? Has anybody got an answer to that?
20% of people say no, they say your price is too right. When 20% of people say no, they say your price is right. That's what I read somewhere.
Okay, so that could be a guideline.
Say that again, sorry.
When 20% of people say no to you, your price is right.
It's an interesting guideline. Some people might say 30 or 40, but who here is into a niche market? Okay, and your
trustees.
How do you find out what people are prepared to pay?
I set a fee for the service, and they either pay it or they don't.
Yeah, I mean, there's a crude way of doing this, and I have to say, I don't know a better way of doing it. And I've talked to a number of people about this in niche markets, dentists and doctors in particular, who are very, very good at it, and have been at it for maybe 7 to 10 years. And I said, well, how do you find your maximum fee? And they said, well, you just keep asking. You just keep pushing it until they can't push anymore. Barry Horner is an interesting example of that to me. He starts on £500 for the advice process and end up at 5,000 or 6,000. How did he do that? Actually, it wasn't a survey. He just kept pushing it. Until
he's... They kept pushing it, what do you mean?
Well, as his confidence grew, he'd ask the next client, I'm worth, you know, this is worth 1,000. Then it was 2, and then it was 3, and then it was 4, and then it was 5. Until in the end, he just pushed to the max. And that's why in the early questions, your confidence was principle number 2. It is your confidence that matters. I asked Barry, how can you afford to charge? How can you get away with charging 6,000 quid? And he said, confidence. I'm just really confident in what I do, and I know it's brilliant. So they better pay it. And because he uses that confidence, they will pay it. We'll talk about how to ask for the fees in more detail later on. But going back to advisor impact, for your profession, they're the ones I know the best. Yeah, I'd use them. Okay. Well, I use monitoring things. I've got online monitors to check what people do and don't want to read. Things that track my website. Things that track every time you click on things, and they tell me what's going on, what's just not attractive anymore, and what's killed because it's been overdone, and what needs to change. So I've got these web things just tracking all the things that you're clicking on, and that tells me, Richard, a lot, because I'm on a different business to you. So it has to be some sort of measure, and it has to be some sort of scientific. And I didn't know how to do that. That's why I've got Peter Lisney helping me and Andrew Walsh, because I wouldn't have a clue. Okay, let's turn to page 11. I want you to spend 2 minutes as a team just talking through, what's this page all about? What's the message here? What's this got to do with high fees?